What's going on, everybody? You are tuned in to the Stoned On Sports podcast. My name is Matt. This cat with me is Kyle. We have a fantastic show on tap for you tonight. We are going to be talking about some dudes who have straight caught fire to begin the season and had a fantastic week last week. I'm sure you have heard, unless your ass is living under a rock, that a slew of pitchers and players overall have hit the injured list, and we're going to go over a couple waiver wire options to help you make up for that loss. We are on the drive to 200 subscribers. We can't make it there without you. So if you're enjoying what you're seeing, and even if you're not, drop a like, drop a subscribe. We'd really appreciate it. And we got the chat hopping already. Blue Yays in the house. What's going on, Blue? He says, hey, boys, glad you could make it tonight.
Yep. Thanks for joining tonight. Appreciate the support.
Absolutely. Kyle wants to know what you got on the menu. Usually you're making your supper around this time. And he's a little nosy. He always wants to hear about that stuff.
Right. So what you got?
You ready to let's jump into this shit. And before we talk about these top performers, let's go back in time just a year, right? Through this point in the season in 2023, your SP1 overall was Jeffrey Springs with 61.5 points, Garrett Cole, Marcus Stroman, Kyle Freeland, and the recently in the news again for not great reasons, Julio Urias would round out the top five. But with the batters, it's even crazier, right? Your number one overall batter with 61 points, CBS standard scoring, was Brian Reynolds. Adam Duvall, Gleyber Torres, Pete Alonso, and Matt Olson are the rest of the top five. Well, where were our superstars last year? Ronald Acuna was tied for the 12th overall batter, and Spencer Strider, rest in peace. He's not dead, but his season is probably dead. He was the number 28 overall starting pitcher. So I say all that to just remind everyone out there, please don't make stupid decisions based on 40 plate appearances or two or three starts. It's a very long season. We've not even played 10% of it yet. Be patient, but you got to know when to pull the trigger. Chances are that's not right now. And remember, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to draw any kind of firm conclusions based on this small of a sample.
Yeah, be patient, like Matt says. I totally agree. We both advocate for, you know, just try and be 500 after 6 weeks of the fantasy season. Evaluate your team, see what you got, and then go from there. Being patient is good. You know, the switching out your util guys, stuff like that. That's not what we're really talking about. It's definitely the big moves. Just hold on tight and wait, especially with all these injuries. Let some things work out.
For sure. I mean, at this point in the season, there's no such thing as a sell high or a buy low.
Yeah, agreed. All right. So our first guy, hot start. I know you got him on one of, I think, the home team, your home league.
And the podcast league.
Hit the wrong button. So let me try that again, folks. Talking about Spencer Steer, the Cincinnati Reds. You'll probably say, God, you guys talk about a lot of Reds. I think he's the only one today. Multi-position guy, just going on a tear so far to start the season. He's really, you know, kind of becoming the leader of that young Reds team in a way, especially through these first couple weeks. Nine games played. He's 13 for 38, two doubles, a triple, three home runs, 12 RBIs, eight runs scored, four walks, only six strikeouts, and two stolen bases. He's slashing .406, .500, .813 for a 1.313 OPS. So far, he is the number two fantasy outfielder on the season. He's started all the games so far in left field, especially left field, not just outfield. But so he hasn't played in the infield as well. He's got a total of 58 fantasy points. He's averaging 5.8 a game. You know, I'll take that all day long. He's doing it with a great walk rate of 10.5%. That's about 2% over league average. And the strikeout rate, oh my God, 15.8, super low. That's great. Probably won't stay right there, but he's playing good. He's had several clutch hits, including two go-ahead home runs just this past week. He's also hitting the ball very hard. Hard hit rate of 57.7, good for top 8% in the league so far. And it really shows because his line drive rate is way up, 10 points higher than his career average. He's at 34.6. That aligns, his career average is 24.7. That aligns with the MLB average of 24.8. So you can see 10 points up is great. Line drives result in hits more frequently than, you know, really any other type of batted ball. A line drive produces 1.26 runs per out, while a fly ball, only 0.13 runs per out. A ground ball, even less than that, just 0.05 runs per out. So there's no, you know, when you're talking about batted ball distribution, there's nothing that's really ideal. But batters who like Spencer Steer so far this season that typically hit a lot of line drives, they typically perform better than hitters, you know, that just hit fly balls or ground balls. Now, he's had some luck, a lot of luck. His BABIP is 0.435. That's definitely, when you see a high BABIP like that, it's definitely an indication that the hitter's going to cool off over the course of the season. To give you some context there, the MLB average BABIP is 293. Again, BABIP, if we haven't covered, we've covered it before a couple times, measures a player's batting average exclusively on balls hit in the field of play. So that's going to remove, you know, home runs. They don't land in the field of play. I love him so far this year. He just came out of nowhere. That's an exciting young Reds team. This week they got four games against the Brewers and three at the White Sox. So you continue to see him playing well this week, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and not only is he the number two overall outfielder, he's the number two overall hitter right now in points leagues, which is fantastic. He had a great rookie year last year, went for, I think he had 23 home runs, a little over 80 RBIs. And the big thing to me that really gives me a lot of confidence in him, not only because of his hot start, but really coming into the season, was that you didn't see the struggles with breaking balls to the degree mm-hmm. that you do with most young hitters. And so far this season, he's seeing about half as many as he did last year. You touched on, he showed a really good plate at the, or eye at the plate last year. This year, he's being pitched around quite a bit. He's only seeing about 45% of pitches in the zone, but he's seeing the ball really well overall this season, based on his hard contact, and his overall contact rate is over 80%, which is, I mean, it's not elite, but it's that next tier down of pretty yep. goddamn good.
I agree.
I enjoy having him on my teams.
I'm sure you do.
So another cat who's been doing pretty damn good, Ryan Helsley, closer out there for the St. Louis Cardinals. He is the number two overall closer last week behind Edwin Diaz, had four innings pitched, notched three saves, struck out three, didn't walk anybody, and only gave up three hits. Looking at his strikeout numbers so far on the season, he's at 7.5 per nine innings. That's very low for him considering yeah. he's got a career rate of 10.6 strikeouts per nine. So there's going to be more strikeouts to come. I'm not concerned overall there. And one thing that's nice about this Cardinals team, especially from the perspective of having their closer, all five of their wins have been by three or fewer runs. And that's likely going to continue. They don't have the kind of offense or starting pitching to really be blowing teams out. His four-seam velo is down a tick this year. It's down 1.5 miles an hour, but it's still elite. It's coming in somewhere around 98.5, if I remember right. Four of his five strikeouts on the season have been with his slider, and that's carrying a 45.5% whiff rate. His overall whiff rate is at 30.2%. His chase rate is at a fantastic 40%, and he's got an above average 12% swinging strike rate. One thing we don't like to see with relievers is you don't want to see him give up the long ball. He's only given up one so far, but it's to Mookie Betts, who's just absolutely destroying everybody. So that's nothing to hang your head about.
It's not. I mean, he has some of the nastiest pitches in baseball, and it's just not one that he dominates with. It's three, a fastball, a slider, and a curveball. Fastball velo last year, 99.7, good for top 1% of the league. That slider's killer in the whiff rates, 52.2 last season. And he's at 45.5 so far this season, which is still pretty damn good. You know, with an arsenal that strong, I'd like to say that he has the potential to be a top five closer, finish as a top five closer, but the rotation there has to eat some innings. If you remember last year, it was bad. The bullpen was taxed so much, they couldn't remain fresh or impactful in any way. I hope that doesn't happen this year there, but I know Sonny Gray's coming back this week, right? Next week, right?
Yeah, today. They showed him off the IL today. He's making his first start today.
Fantastic. What do we got in the chat? Oh, a Captain Spock sighting. What's up, man? What's up, guys?
Long time no see.
Yeah, have a good fantasy baseball season. Looking forward to more fantasy football content later this summer. That is definitely going to happen starting, you know, around August, first week of August or so. We'll be definitely going deep into some fantasy football position previews.
And even before then, you know, we're going to be putting out a post NFL draft fantasy mock draft. We'll probably do something like 5 to 7 rounds once we have a little bit of clarity on where folks are going to go. And then you got mini camp and training camp. We're going to work on putting out some more fantasy football content, just in long form videos, you know, maybe put them out on a weekend every other week or so, something like that, because we do have a good portion of our audience that are fantasy football players as well.
Heck yeah. You got a guy that's been killing it in Colorado. Yeah.
We got one more here. Brandon, him and Timmy are watching from Greektown Casino. Excellent. Down there in Detroit. We appreciate it, brother. What's going on, Timmy?
A Timmy sighting. Holy cow.
No kidding. All right.
Are you going to do Ryan McMahon or?
No, you are.
No. I don't do him, do I? Oh, God.
Yes, you sure do.
Jeez. Whew. Guys, whew. This is bad.
Welcome to the Not Prepared podcast.
Welcome to the second base, third baseman, Ryan McMahon with the Rockies. Really been a model of consistency in recent years. He's not as, you know, eye-catching as some other infielders in the league, but he definitely provides some fantasy value. And he has so far this season, 10 games. He's 14 for 36, 10 singles, 2 doubles, 2 homers, a sac fly, which counts for points too, 7 RBIs, 4 runs, 5 walks, 9 Ks, no stolen bases. He's slashing .389, .452, .611 with a 1.063 OPS. So far on the season, he's the number 5 fantasy third baseman. He's averaging 3.4 points per game, playing well. Getting on base, his walk rate is excellent at 11.9. Strikeout rate is right around normal, just a little bit less than average at 21.4. But he's also been putting a fucking charge into the ball. He's top 3 in the league right now of exit velo at 95.4. That's up 4.5% from last season. The hard hit rate as well, 57%, top 9% of the league. That's almost up 13% from last season. And like I mentioned, with my player earlier, you know, the BABIP, he's getting pretty lucky too, .462. But that hard hit rate really helps a ton for that. If the fielders can't, it's coming at him at a million miles an hour, they can't field it. So, his 2 home runs that I said he had, both of those were at Coors. I definitely like him, you know, at home more often than, you know, if you got a 7-game week where you can just load him into the lineup for 7 games, of course, I'll take that all day long. In those 10 games played, he's had 1 hit in at least 9 of them. He's cut his strikeout percentage nearly in half from 31 to 18, while still keeping, you know, this double digit barrel percentage we're accustomed to seeing within the last few years. I mean, he's going to be heavily relied upon there, really, in that lineup. That's a team looking to take a step forward. It's fair to say you probably won't see much more growth from him, but there because there's limited upside with him. But we also have a very good idea what to expect for him on a week-to-week basis. And the fact that he can fill in at second or third makes him even more valuable. So it's still early. We'll see, you know, once all the underlying metrics have kind of stabled. I think the gains could stick and could be a terrific season for him.
For sure. I mean, he was the number four third baseman last week, just a point and a half behind Michael Garcia. Michael Garcia was the number two third baseman, but Spencer Steer, he's eligible friggin' everywhere. So it almost like it doesn't count. But anytime you can go a week with an on-base percentage of 440, hit a couple home runs and drive in five, it's a good week. One thing I noticed is he's seeing a steady diet of fastballs, and he is not missing. He's making contact on almost 85% of his swings on fastballs. He's batting 533 against them with a 98.2 mile an hour average exit velocity. He is pounding the shit out of them. And you brought up his overall hard contact. He's doing fantastic. He is somebody who, you're absolutely right, I'd rather play him at home than on the road. But there are some places like Cincinnati, Arizona, sure, where I'm perfectly fine running him out there. That Rockies offense hasn't really looked all that great. But we also, when we're talking about that Rockies offense, they played their first like seven games on the road. And I saw people were dropping Rockies players after that seven game stretch without them even playing a game at home yet. And that goes back to the point made earlier. Be patient. It's a long ass season. He's a solid play for you. And you've heard us say it on here several times, and you're going to continue to hear us say it really throughout this fantasy season. Be patient.
Yeah. Yep.
Be patient. All right. Well, we got Loud Boy is in the house. Coming through. What's up, bro? Hams, appreciate you stopping by, brother.
Great trade the other day, sir. Great trade.
Yeah, thank you. Look at you two conspiring.
Yeah, helped each other out, you know.
Yep. Blue Yays looks like he's splitting. Appreciate you coming through. Who's next on the docket? Oh, yeah, this guy.
Oh, God.
So speaking of murdering the ball, we're talking about Marcell Ozuna from the Braves. Last week, he was the number two overall hitter behind Spencer Steer, the number one DH. And it's a shame that that's really all he's eligible at, but the way he's swinging the bat, you don't really care. He put up 32.5 points. He was 9-for-22, scored 6 runs, had 2 doubles, hit 3 home runs, and drove in 7. Had a triple slash of 429, 455, 952 for a 1407 OPS. And you look at that start, and granted, it's just a few games, but let's look back to how he started last year.
Horrible.
085, 194, 203 triple slash, 2 home runs, 2 RBIs, and 5 hits through the first month of the season.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see him draw some more walks. He only had one on the week. And right now he's got a 2.4% walk rate compared to an 8% career walk rate. And so this is that small sample. We're not going to draw any conclusions. The walks will come. He's been very aggressive at the plate this season overall, swinging at the first pitch 41.5% of the time, swinging at almost 55% of overall pitches. And he's seeing a little over half of his pitches in the zone, which is nice. He does have that swing and miss there, though, a 30.5% whiff rate, and he does have 9 strikeouts on the season, but that's a trade-off you're going to take considering the power and run production you're going to get for him batting in the order or heart of a fantastic Atlanta Braves order.
Well, it's great. He's averaging 5.2 fantasy points on the season per game. He hit his 5th homer last night, actually, versus the Mets. He's tied with Betts, Trout, Tyler O'Neill. I think that's it. Tyler O'Neill, man, I'm so glad I scooped him up. He's in a 4-way tied for the 3rd most RBIs at 12. It's really encouraging to see him start like this. And I don't have anything else to add because you hit on it all that I hit.
Nice.
Okay, next up, we got guy I had last year in my home league, liked him for a while to get injured, but Michael Wacha with the Kansas City Royals. He signed as a free agent there, already established himself as, you know, I think he's a rotation stabilizer. That's my word for him. I think he's always worth using when he's in line for two starts like he was last week. Through two games so far, he's 2.25 ERA, 0.58 whip, a 31% strikeout rate, 4.8% walk rate. He struck out 13 and he's allowed only 5 hits in 12 innings so far. He's the number 16 fantasy starting pitcher. Those two starts, he averaged 21.3 a game. I mean, you'll take that all day long. The one on Saturday against the White Sox just annihilated them, got the win, got the quality start, through 93 total pitches, induced 10 swinging strikes as well. He only allowed one fucking runner past first base. It's very good. Very good. You definitely got to give it to, the whole team there. There's teammates behind him helping him put guys away. So, he's doing it with just a fantastic ground ball rate of 48%. Average is 42.6 for MLB. And he keeps the ball in the park. He's decreased his launch angle 5.4% versus last year. His fastball and his breaking ball, the velocity are up on both pitches versus last season. He's really kind of had a reputation over his career as a fly ball pitcher, but he's kept his home runs down. He's a 1.14 home run per nine innings over the last two seasons. That I really like him there rest of season in Kansas City because Kauffman Stadium's fucking spacious. I like him there. I think he's going to continue doing well. I'm not saying he's going to get 16 wins, but he's going to contribute and pull his weight on your fantasy roster.
He is. And one thing to note, that 13 strikeouts across 12 innings, that's going to be on the high side of what you can expect. He's just shy of a strikeout per inning. For his career, he's around 8 strikeouts per 9. He absolutely dominated the White Sox, which was great. But again, that should be the expectation as opposed to something that's exceptional. That team, he's not going to get a whole hell of a lot of run support. He got just 7 runs in his two starts last week. But he does have a nice couple of matchups coming up again at the Mets, and then he gets the White Sox again. Pick him up, stash him for a little bit, ride him while he's hot. That's really one of the big keys to sustain success in fantasy baseball is looking ahead. You got to put in a little bit of the work. We're going to put in some of the work for you as well, but we can't identify everybody.
No, we cannot.
All right. We've got one more dude who has had just one hell of a week last week. Alex Kirilloff of the Minnesota Twins plays a little first base, a little bit of outfield. The bad part is he's a lefty bat and he's in a platoon. He has not played against left-handed starters yet this season. But last week he was the number 9 first baseman or the number 9 or 18 outfielder, got you 20 points. He went 7-for-16 with a double, 3 triples, which is just insane.
Yeah.
He only drove in one, walked a couple of times, K'd a couple of times, and he scored 3 runs. He's hitting at or near the top of the order. He's really cut down on his strikeouts thus far, just 3 on the season, good for a 9.7% rate. The Twins are a team that's not really scoring that much right now. They're averaging fewer than 3 runs per contest, and that's going to put a limit on his run production. But he's got a triple slash, a 370, 419, 667 on the season. He's doing his job. He's setting the table. He's getting on base, but he has just 4 runs scored on the season. So it's the bats behind him that aren't really doing a whole hell of a lot. He's been more aggressive at the plate this season. His first pitch swing rate and his swing rate overall are up over 4%. And he's another one of those post-hype guys. He came up to a lot of fanfare, had a fantastic prospect pedigree. He's just now starting to come into his prime, and there's a nice chance he gives you a good season. He is going to be stuck in a platoon, though, until he improves against left-handed pitchers. He's just a career 213 hitter with a 294 on base and 348 slug against lefties. Only 5 home runs, 38 strikeouts, and 141 at-bats. So you're going to have to pay attention to the upcoming schedule and make sure that you're putting him in there, giving yourself an opportunity to be successful and not running him out there when the Twins face four lefties in a week.
Exactly. Yep. I was just going to say the same thing. Look ahead to the schedule. If there's six games and there's six righties out there, maybe five, you know, definitely start him. I mean, he's a strong target on waivers right now. You just have to kind of pick and choose your places. I don't have their schedule up right now, but when he is in the game, you know, against right-handers, he's hitting in the two hole. He's going to get some extra at bats for that. He started games at all the positions, DH, left field, first base. He's just so versatile that, given the right matchups, I'd roll him out there as a, you know, outfielder three, util, like that.
For sure.
Okay. Injury time. Everybody's been kind of, pitcher's been falling left and right. We'll talk about a couple batters as well. First one's a guy we've talked about, Spencer Strider. Matt took him at number one with his pick in our listener league this year, and bet he wish he didn't, but oh well. So when I went an MRI Saturday, revealed damage to his UCL. He's on the 15-day IL as of now. Not good. I mean, his ERA has been 7 after two starts this year. Last year's ERA was 3.86. He's only scored 28 fantasy points this season. It's really a bummer because he spent the entire offseason improving his game by adding that new curveball. And all signs really pointed to this being a special season for him. So, fortunately for the Braves, they're equipped in terms of personnel. They entered the season with, you know, plenty of organizational depth at starting pitching options, but none of what can replace what Strider did. So, but with the strong lineup there, you know, any potential replacement doesn't have to work wonders. They just, you know, the lineup can hopefully take care of the rest. So it's a bummer. The Braves called up right-handed pitcher Alan Wynans from AAA Gwinnett. Looks like he's expected to be the starter next Wednesday against the Mets, or this Wednesday against the Mets. We'll see. Bummer for them.
It is, and they're a team who's, I mean, losing somebody like Spencer Strider, it's a massive blow, regardless of who it is. But that team just, you know, you talk about the lineup, excuse me, and the organizational depth. We're not going to get an update on him until this weekend. Doubt the news is going to be good. I wouldn't at all be surprised to find out come Saturday that he's already had surgery, either Tommy John or the internal brace procedure, something like that. The internal brace, he's still going to miss the year, but the rehab on that is nowhere near as rigorous and intense as what you have with Tommy John surgery. If he does get Tommy John, it'll be his second. He had his first one in February of 2019 when he was a sophomore at Clemson. The severity of the tear is going to determine if it's Tommy John, internal brace, or if it's going to be rehab and like a PRP injection, something like that. They did bring up Wynans in the corresponding move there, but they do have some good candidates internally as potential long-term replacements. We saw AJ Smith-Shawver last year, who he kind of struggled, but he's also very young. Bryce Elder, who is a former All-Star. Yep. Dylan Dodd, and then Huascar Ynoa, who came up and burned very brightly for a short period of time and had people run into the waiver wire to pick him up. And there's a possibility that they try and trade some of that organizational depth for somebody a little bit better than what they have in-house. You know, right now, time's going to tell. We don't really know a whole hell of a lot, but the picture is going to become clearer as we move forward.
Yeah.
Well, keeping on brand with pitcher injuries, we've got Shane Bieber of the Cleveland Guardians. He's having Tommy John surgery. It's going to be scheduled here sooner rather than later because he wants to get ready and get his rehab started. He said he started feeling discomfort in a start against Oakland and just kind of chalked it up to, you know, early season soreness and it was cold out, et cetera, et cetera. It got worse versus Seattle. The team announced that he was going to be out that following morning, Saturday morning, and it seemed like it was out of the blue. And he's somebody who spent some time at Driveline in the offseason working on gaining some lost fastball velocity, which he did, and movement on his curveball. And seeing all these pitcher injuries, it's really frustrating. Right. He's going to be a free agent after the season. And there are people, you know, outside voices saying that Cleveland mismanaged his whole team control and contract situation. They should have traded him last year. Hindsight's 2020, right? We don't have a whole lot of clarity as to who's going to take his place in the rotation. They've got prospects, Joey Cantillo or Will Dion at AAA. Daniel Espino is also an option, but he's working his way back from an injury himself. And again, there's the trade market there. One thing the Guardians have shown they've been able to do over the past several years is they can develop pitchers. So I have some confidence in them to, even if they go with one of their young guys to bring them up, you're not going to get the same performance that you saw out of Bieber. He looked like one of the best pitchers in the league this year through just a couple starts. You're not going to get that from some jabroni down at Columbus or wherever the hell their AAA or AA team is, though.
I know they got Tyler Beattie there. They could maybe move him from long relief to the rotation, but we will see. It's really a shame, all these pitcher injuries. You know, long list of players here, DeGrom and Robbie Ray and McClanahan and Buehler and Giolito, Dustin May, Eury Pérez, Strider, we just mentioned, Pavetta, Seven, I think his strain's...
flexor strain.
Yeah, it's not major, though. I think he will be all right. But Josiah Gray came out today that elbow and forearm tenderness and issues. It's just, how do you fix this problem with no obvious solution? It's tough.
It is. And right now people are looking for something to blame. They're looking for a silver bullet that's going to cause all this. Players Association is saying it's the pitch clock. It's not just one thing. When you tear your UCL, that is a wear and tear injury. All right. Everybody's UCL has a finite number of pitches in it. Some people hit that number early. Some people, like you look at somebody like Justin Verlander, he didn't have Tommy John surgery until he was damn near 40 and threw all those damn innings. One thing I think is a contributing factor is they lowered the stitching on the ball. And so now in order to generate the same amount of spin, you have to grip the ball harder.
Yeah.
Even for fastballs. They took away the spider tack, which I get, you know, I mean, that makes sense. And I'd seen some demonstrations. You want to talk about sticky stuff. That shit is sticky. but with those grip enhancements, we really saw three true outcomes baseball. You're in a home run, you're going to strike out, or you're going to walk, and that, and you had it combined with the shift, and offense was down, and baseball understandably made some changes to the rules to help kind of give offense a nudge. Well, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, and we're starting to see that. You've got pitchers throwing harder earlier, you've got pitchers throwing harder more frequently. They're not taking 2 months off after the season ends to rest themselves. They're continuing to throw and continuing to throw, and they're ramping up earlier. I think it was Garrett Cole that said he attributes his injury to getting too intense with his throwing too early in the season.
It's really a perfect storm. I think it's, you know, a little bit of the clock, pitch design, the velocity. It really is. And it's really been, you know, if you want to call it the elbow crisis, it's really been building for decades from the youth levels, and nobody, you know, in a position of powers wanted to do a fucking thing about it. So here we are.
They have it. And even if you baby somebody like the Marlins did with Eury Pérez, it still doesn't matter.
They did baby the shit out of him. Yeah. It's muscles and ligaments just can't handle the strain. Just can't.
They can't.
They're gonna break. It's too bad. Who we got next? A
couple more dudes who got hurt.
Yeah. First one is shortstop with the Red Sox, Trevor Story. Just a fucking bummer. hurt his shoulder diving for a ground ball in Friday's game versus the Angels. Lands on the IL. MRI revealed a left shoulder dislocation. And then today they announced, a fractured glenoid in the shoulder. Surgery is scheduled for Friday, out for the season. Can't start doing shit for 6 months at least. He hasn't been playing that well either. Just in a game, 7-for-24 with a 617 OPS. He struck out, 26% of the time. That's well above average. But, it was early. His game Friday was just the 145th game that he has played for them since he signed with the Red Sox in 2000, before the 2022. Missed 68 games in 22 due to right hand and issues with his left heel, and then had that UCL injury himself. Missed the first 112 games of last season. But, big loss for them. He was hitting a 3 or 4 hole. It's being filled right now by Tyler O'Neill, and he's doing a hell of a fucking job at it. So we'll see. They did recall infielder David Hamilton from AAA Worcester. So we'll see. And Vaughn Grissom's dealing with his own injury. He's expected to be back. So you would expect to see him playing shortstop some more. In fact, the manager there in his rehab assignment said, I want to play in some short wides down there. So he's looking to be back April 23rd. But bum for Trevor Story. Just can't stay healthy.
Yeah, and they got that second look, and for those of you who, don't really know anatomy like me, that glenoid, it's where the arm attaches to the shoulder. So obviously that's going to be an issue.
Pretty important.
It is. The Red Sox top prospect, shortstop Marcelo Mayer, he's down in Double A where he struggled last year. In 43 games, posting a 189, 254, 355 triple slash and struck out almost 26% of the time. He's not ready to come up to the show.
I suppose the best chance for right now is Pablo Reyes to just take over.
It is. He's the easy route to take.
Yeah.
We'll see how things go. I don't think expectations for Boston were really that high coming into the season anyway.
The way their pitching staff has gone so far, it's a bummer. It is.
They've made some changes there that we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Sweet. Oh, sorry. My bad.
All right. And our last injured player, Luis Robert of the Chicago White Sox, he suffered a grade 2 hip flexor strain. And if that sounds familiar, that's because he did that shit before in 2021, and that kept him out 3.5 months.
Yeah, now, I was going to say it was 4 months or something. Yep.
That was a more severe strain. That was a grade 3 strain. The official line from the White Sox is they're thinking 6 to 8 weeks. I've seen some rumors where there's some folks internally who believe it's going to be closer to 3 or 4 months. We'll see. His replacement on the team, quite frankly, I'm not really concerned. They're the worst team in the league, and whoever they run in there is not going to be anyone that has any kind of fantasy value whatsoever. But if you have Luis Robert, and he'd been off to a hot-ish start, at least in terms of the power, he'd been striking out around half the time as well. So there were definitely some early season kinks to work out. But you saw what he can do when he's on the field last year. Damn near 40 home runs. And so that's what you were looking for when you took him this year, hoping for 120, 130, 140 games played. It's looking like that's not going to be a reality this year.
No, and they're going to be running out Kevin Pillar, and who I didn't even realize was on a Major League Baseball roster until 2 weeks ago, and Robbie Grossman. So it's not
Not it's former Tiger here. Robbie Grossman.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, he had some cool games and stuff there, but
he was fantasy viable for a couple months.
A minute there, but and yeah, Chicago's horrible, and now their offense without him is going to be even more anemic. They've scored the fewest runs in Major League Baseball with 16, and they have the AL's worst run differential at minus 30. Yeah, I really struggle to roster any White Sox player right now, unless it's Crochet, if he can keep pitching well, at least until he hits his innings and can't pitch no more, because I don't see how he's going to throw that much. But
yeah, and that was already an offense. It was without Eloy Jimenez,
who he's working back, should be soon,
but he's somebody who is, seems like he spends more time on the IL than he does in the lineup.
He does. All right. Some waivers. So we've barely taken the lid off the season, right? These little waivers here, that I'll just say, these player evaluations are going to be, at least mine will be a little bit skewed towards playing time and their role with the team, give it some time. But the first guy I want to talk about, we just talked about the Red Sox starting pitchers. God, I hit the wrong button again. I need to get with it. Garrett Whitlock. God, that arm. It's crazy. And just look at his neck muscles and everything. And he's straining. I wonder why all these people get hurt. So he's available in 48% of Yahoo leagues, 61% of CBS leagues, ESPN. I forgot to check. But we do really like to get some of the lower owned guys and talk about those more than Juan Soto. You know you're starting him, right? So if you missed out on Tanner Houck, maybe Whitlock is a nice consideration this week. The Red Sox rotation's been solid, including Whitlock. He's started two games. He's 1-0 with a 0.96 ERA. He's only allowed 7 hits, 1 earned run, 4 walks, struck out 12. He's the number 53 fantasy starter. 28 points total. He's averaging 14 a start in those two starts. So pretty good. He did have the Angels on Saturday, and that didn't go as well. He didn't allow a run, but had 4 hits, walked 4, struck out 4, no decision. He only pitched 4 in a third, and he threw 101 pitches. It's a lot. Excellent strikeout rate, 30.8%. Needs to work on his walks. That's a tick little high. He's at 10.3%. Whitlock has thrown, he throws his breaking stuff over 58% of the time. He's a sinker, a slider, and a sweeper, and it's been really effective because his ground ball rate's at 50% so far. That's way above the 42% league average. I think he's shown the ability to be a good starter, but injuries in the past have derailed those, hopes early in his career. The Red Sox need starters. It's his job as long as he stays healthy. I think you can ride him even and Tanner Houck too, and others while they are healthy. His next start is again against the Angels, so look for him to get some revenge.
For sure. And even after that Angels start, he's got a couple starts back-to-back against Cleveland. Cleveland's off to a hot start, but I think a good portion of that is smoke and mirrors. They got a new pitching coach there in Boston, Andrew Bailey. And he has reworked the pitch mix of that starting staff and de-emphasized fastballs and has emphasized more off-speed and breaking pitches. And there's some...
Yeah, they're forcing shit into the dirt. You see it a lot more with the data.
And there's some solid elementary logic that goes into that, and that being fastballs come in faster than anything else, meaning when you hit it, it's going to leave the bat on average faster than anything else. The harder you hit a ball, the greater your chance there is for a hit. So now he has changed his pitch mix. He's working off of his changeup, followed by his sinker and slider. He's getting plenty of strikeouts, and that's also translated into inducing a lot of soft contact and ground balls. I don't know how long this whole staff is going to be able to keep this up. This is a change in pitching philosophy. Yeah. So there's going to be some bumps in the road. I don't know that Andrew Bailey is some kind of Renaissance man who is going to reimagine the way pitchers attack hitters throughout the league. But so far, the early returns are looking really good. And this is another thing, ride the hot streak.
Yep.
Because batters are going to adjust.
Yep. Yep. It most likely will not last.
No, probably not. Next up, we got a couple more folks here to talk about. We are going to talk about Seth Lugo of the Kansas City Royals. And this dude has been around for a minute. He was a reliever for the most part during his career. But so far, number 17 starting pitcher, scored 39.5 points, started two games, 12 and two-thirds innings pitched. He's only 1-0, but he does have two quality starts, struck out 7, walked 3, and he's allowed 10 hits. Last year was his first full season as a starter. He's somebody that pitches to contact. He's not a big strikeout pitcher. There's not a whole hell of a lot of swing and miss there. He does average 9 strikeouts per 9 for his career, but that's closer to 8 as a starter. When he was a reliever and he'd go out there max effort, sure, he was 10 strikeouts per 9, 11 strikeouts per 9 there when he was with the Mets. He does a good job of limiting hard contact and inducing ground balls. His average exit velocity is only 88.5 miles an hour. He's got a 39.5% hard hit rate and a 50% ground ball rate. Mentioned this with Michael Wacha. Same's going to hold true for Seth Lugo. Don't look for a lot of run support. And you're also going to see some regression in his runs allowed. His strand rate is very high, sitting at just under 93%. And all that is a measure of how many runners reach base are allowed to score. So right now, only 7% are. That's not sustainable. So he is pitching a little bit over his head right now, but he's a viable streamer in the right matchup. He does tentatively line up for a couple starts here next week or week after next. I forget. Going against the White Sox or at Chicago and then home against Baltimore. He's only 28% rostered. I don't like the start against Baltimore, but I love the start against Chicago.
I agree. He's 60. It's weird how there's these big deltas on rostering on different formats, and I haven't quite figured out why, but he's 60% rostered on CBS, 27, or you said 28. I saw it was at 27 a couple days ago when I was doing some research on Yahoo. I mean, a guy had 140 Ks last year, 23% strikeout rate. Yeah, like Matt said, great streaming piece, good matchups, ride the hot streaks, use them when you can. Two starts are good. You mentioned he had the Orioles, but the week after that, he's tentatively faced up against the Tigers. So an offense that's done so far, but a good matchup as well.
Yeah, and so one of the things that contributes to the ownership differences actually goes back to draft season. Because people will draft based off a site's default rankings or default projections instead of just sorting by ADP. And let's be real, 99% of people out there are not going to do their own projections. They're not going to do their own rankings. They're going to go with ECR or they're going to go with the website default. And the projections are only as good as a person doing them. So that can help explain a little bit of it.
Heck yeah. All right. Another starting pitcher. James Paxton with the Dodgers. He's a two-start pitcher this week, currently this week, week 3. But still, you know, has some nice matchups in the future. He's just 27% owned on Yahoo as well. Yesterday versus the Twins, he threw 6 innings, three hits. One of them was a 2-run home from Manuel Margot. 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 Ks. He owns a 1.64 ERA and a 1.18 whip through the two starts. Right now, I have him as the 23rd fantasy starting pitcher overall. He's averaging 19.8 points per start. He's not the strikeout pitcher he was in 2018, 2019 when he threw over 200 in 2018 and just shy in 2019. But he's at a 20% strikeout rate this season. Needs to get that up a little bit more. I think that'll happen as time. Last year, he was at 24.6, which is above average, so that's good. He's very good at limiting, you know, traffic while keeping the ball on the ground and keeping the ball in the park. If you can roster a pitcher that's on one of the best teams in baseball, I would do it. If he does make a mistake, you know, every pitcher has a bad outing, right? But that powerful Dodgers lineup can definitely keep him in it. He starts Sunday versus the Padres, followed by projected starts versus the Mets in week four, and then the Nationals in week five. So some juicy matchups coming up.
Yeah, he's somebody I really enjoyed watching a few years ago because he generally was a very high strikeout guy, high ratios, high K per nine. Yep. But over the past 3 years, he has less than 118 total innings pitched. And those injuries, they wear you down. You're absolutely right, though. I will happily take a piece of that Dodgers rotation, and I will ride James Paxton for as long as he is healthy and out there on the mound. His strikeout rate should go up. His walkout rate is going to drop. Did I just say walkout rate?
I think you might have, but I'll let it pass.
All right. Well, that's that hard-hitting analysis that people tune in for. See, that's why you should subscribe to the channel, because we just make up our own terms here, and they're legit.
Right.
You know, 39.5 points across two starts, 11 innings pitched. The walks are a concern, and that's reflected in his whip, right, at 1.18. That's generally a little bit higher than you want to see. You know, I prefer my starters closer to 1.1 flat, or maybe even a little under 1.1. But with that lineup, he can go out there and give up three or four earned runs every damn night and still win most of the damn matchups.
Yep, I agree.
We got Loud Boy confirming that I said walkout rate. So I appreciate that, brother. You're always there in the chat having our back.
All right. One last more dude.
Yes. Brendan Donovan got a little multi-position eligibility there for the St. Louis Cardinals. He needs a haircut too. Damn hippie. Sign said long-haired freaky people need not apply, yet here he is. So far on the season, you know, he's the number 12 second baseman. He's a number 23 outfielder. So, you know, second base, he's a fringe starter. Outfield, he's solidly in there. 34.5 points. His triple slash is nothing amazing. 278, 422, 472. The on-base percentage is fantastic.
I'll take the 422 OBP for sure.
Sure. He's got four doubles, a home run, and five walks so far. This dude has reached base 15 times in 10 games. That's pretty damn good. He hits leadoff most of the time. I'm generally always happy to have the leadoff hitter from almost any team. He's making excellent overall contact, even if he doesn't hit the ball exceptionally hard. He's got a 15.3% whiff rate, a 17.5% chase rate, and a 92.3% zone contact rate. This dude is dialed in right now. You're not going to expect much power from him overall, and we see that in his, you know, just one home run. And run production is going to be limited. I think he'll finish somewhere around 110 to 120-ish runs plus RBIs, but he's going to get on base. He strikes out well below league average, so he's not going to hurt you there. He is 55% rostered, and that's a little bit higher than what we generally like to bring up here. But keep in mind, that's up 20% in the last 24 hours. Just so he is a hot waiver pickup right now.
He is. He returned to the lineup this past Saturday. He had a one-game absence due to right elbow bruise, I think it was. But he looked just fine against the Marlins. He knocked a double in the third inning. He doubled again to lead off the fifth, and then reached a third time drawing a walk. One of those doubles came with two strikes, so it further emphasizes for me he's making great adjustments at the plate. He's always been kind of that super utility player for the Cardinals, but he's playing his, you know, way into more playing time due to injuries. He's an intriguing pickup in most formats, especially with that positional eligibility. In most leagues, he has second base and outfield. He could easily pick up third base by the end of the season. We'll see. He started a couple games there. Well, started one and pinch hit and replace somebody. But so what you need to do with him, as he's so hot right now, keep an eye on Tommy Edman. He was cleared for baseball activities this week. He's been on the IL with a wrist injury. Donovan may not remain in the leadoff spot once Tommy Edman returns. So you definitely want to look at that. But it's going to be a while. Edmund's basically got to ramp up and basically go through his own spring training because he was hurt pretty early. But like Matt said, ride this hot streak. So it can help you win games, man.
Yeah. Speaking of games played at a position milestone, Mookie Betts just hit one, didn't he?
Yep. Shortstop hit his 10th game last night. So he's eligible at short, second, and outfield. Gotta love it. Plug him all over.
And I know that this episode has been kind of doom and gloom. That
in a way,
got this cloud hanging over all these pitchers getting hurt. But there's some good information too. Sonny Gray returned from the IL today. Braxton Garrett is going to make another rehab start, and then if everything goes well, he's going to be cleared to join the Marlins rotation. Kyle Bradish is starting to ramp things up, and there's a good chance he could be back around the beginning of May. And he was dealing with his own UCL injury and opted to go for the rehab and you know, PRP injection or whatever the hell they do, and shoot him full of steroids. I don't give a shit. Just get his ass back out there on the mound.
That's right.
Because arms are falling at just a crazy pace. And now more than ever, it's important to make sure that you are keeping an eye on a waiver wire and not just looking at what's available, but pay attention to the transaction history in your league. See who people are dropping. See who they're picking up. See who's being impatient and cutting bait on somebody after 40 plate appearances, after two or three starts, when you damn well know better that the player is better than that and should not be on waivers.
And for sure, because I don't remember which league it was, but somebody dropped Nick Castellanos. I snagged him, you know, and I'm starting him right now. He's sitting there on my bench. We'll see what happens, but eventually he will get plugged into the lineup when I need him.
Sure. Loudboy pointing out that Donovan struck out during his segment. Appreciate that. That nothing like lending us some legitimacy and credence there, Brendan Donovan, you sorry son of a bitch. Anyways.
All right. Real fast before we end, we like to go over the listener league standing so far.
Oh, I gotta take that. Hey, who's Adam first?
That is you, the green bastards. You have the most points, too, 736. I'm right behind you in second. With 732 total points. Brandon, Seon's BBC, and AJ's Optimal team got the wins last week. And we got Supersonic, Uncle Ted, Icon, Mighty Muscles, and Connor's Cool team at 0-1, trying to get back to 500 this week and win their matchup. Good luck, everybody. Except
let me draw your attention to that column there all the way on the right that says moves. And you'll see... 6-8-4-7-3-67.
Hey, we're not going to pick on him. He's building his team the way he wants to, and he's 0-1. Love you, kid.
I mean, he put up...
Love you, loud boy.
He put up 684 points in his first week ever playing fantasy baseball. That's pretty damn good.
It is. I agree. Good luck, everybody, as well. What do you have to say here? Go, Captain Spock says, go, loud boy. Good to have the football folks in the baseball chat. I love it. And then Matt and I do that weekly DFS matchup on Sundays. I beat him again, folks. I'm 2-0. He's 0-2. You had a bunch of donuts. Carson Kelly, Westberg, Trey Turner. Didn't go too well for you. Toro, who I threw in for huge salary relief for Sunday's game against the Tigers, went off and it was great. Looking forward to beating you again this Sunday.
Better lucky than good, buddy, because I doubt you even know what his first name is, and that's why you just called him Toro.
Oh, I can't remember now. It's okay. Yeah.
Let's put a bow on this thing. I'm getting hungry.
Let's do it. Yep.
All right, I guess I'll do it. Thanks, everybody, for stopping by tonight. If you haven't already, throw us a like and subscribe. We are on the march to 200 subscribers, and we're getting close. but it's not going to stop there and it's not going to happen without you. We're trying to build a community here and have a little fun and help push each other to some fantasy sports success. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Stay stoned.
Stay stoned.